you decided to chase that rabbit down that rabbit hole, found our link, and pressed play, then yes, you have found your destination. And that destination is the Raw Gypsy Not Quite Hippie Podcast. Hey there, everyone. This is Trey Byerjohn with the Raw Gypsy Not Quite Hippie Podcast. In today's episode, I get the opportunity to interview Dr. Benjamin Benulis. He's a chiropractic physician who has an incredible story, absolutely incredible story. This young man, he grew up on the East Coast, eating the standard American diet, living the standard American life, but somewhere along the way, developed a chronic autoimmune disorder called chronic myalgic encephalopathy. Now, for those who don't really know what that means, this is a chronic autoimmune disorder that affects the muscular system, your brain, causes extreme pain throughout your muscles. It also causes brain fog, just lethargic, nasty, just not feeling well. And he discovered that this was all due to his diet. Now, Dr. Benjamin, you know, he is a technically minded individual who sees things in black and white, and also became a mechanical engineer and later a microchip engineer. So he saw things in a different way. And along his path, he discovered that there is an alternative way of medicine, an alternative way of health. When Dr. Benjamin found out that he was allergic to so many different foods, and being that he didn't want to have to cook, he said, you know, I'm going to take the easy way out, and I'll just make smoothies. And somewhere along diving down that rabbit hole, he discovered a whole new life, a whole food, raw, plant-based lifestyle. And amazingly, this, just by sheer accident, this raw, whole food, plant-based lifestyle healed him. It healed his chronic autoimmune disorder. It's incredible. It's absolutely incredible what the human body can do. And it's absolutely incredible the gifts that we're given to do it with. And thankfully, he was able to find it. And Dr. Ben decided to take the bull by the horns, travel a different path from his engineering background, use that engineering background to incorporate into his medical field, in the field of chiropractic care, in the field of naturopathic nutritional care. And that's what he does today. You know, he helps folks with their issues, with their autoimmune disorders, with their ingestional issues, and all around healthcare. It's an absolutely valiant effort that this man puts forth. And I hope y'all enjoy this podcast episode. I had a great time talking with him. Super guy. So y'all stay tuned, sit back, relax, and enjoy Dr. Benjamin Benulis. Well, hello, Dr. Benjamin Benulis. How you doing, brother?
I'm great. Glad to be here today. Excited to do this.
I'm super, super excited to have you. You know, we had talked before, and I've interviewed two doctors prior, and you would be my third. And I seem to be on a roll, man. I seem to be getting these plant-based doctors who are just, you know, rocking the world and changing lives. I love it. I absolutely love it.
Yeah. And if you need any more referrals, I can throw a few more your way. Happy to.
Well, so. I'm a bit of an anatomy and physiology nerd myself.
Okay.
And you know, getting to speak with someone of your expertise, and we'll get into it, of course, but it's like I'm like a kid in a candy store, you know. I absolutely love it. So, all right, before we get started, I always do a thing called the hot seat, and that's where I ask you four just random questions. They don't necessarily pertain to the podcast. It's just some icebreaker questions to kind of get
cool.
The party started.
Sounds like fun.
Yeah. So, all right, number one, who's your favorite superhero?
Probably Batman.
Ooh. Yeah, Batman's my favorite in the DC. Thor's my favorite in Marvel, but Batman's definitely the guy in the DC world. I love him. Number two, what is the one thing that you've done that you would not let someone else do? Someone that you've done, but you would never let someone else do?
Let's see. I would say do not pursue stand-up comedy as any sort of career.
Do you have a background in that?
Yeah, I did it for a while. Yeah.
Okay. All right, I'll take your word for it, man. That may be a subject for another conversation. I don't know. That sounds interesting, though. Who or what, and it could be physical, personal, but who or what is your nemesis?
My nemesis has got to be the current American healthcare system.
I agree.
And I hate to even use the word healthcare. It's a sick continuation system.
You're right, brother. And it seems to be all wrapped up in whether it's in the pharmaceutical industry or the lack thereof, and of course the government, and then the meat, the dairy industry. They all seem to play a part in assisting in this sick care, a standard American diet, which is sad. It's very sad.
Yeah.
Sad. Well, good deal. Number four is a would you rather question. Would you rather be able to remember every book that you've ever read or have a photographic memory?
Remembering the books, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Knowledge is power, man. It's and the books are, that's the way to go. That's true. That is true.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, good deal, man. I appreciate that. That is the hot seat. And let's get started. Tell us a little bit about Dr. Benoulas. Where did you call home? Where did you grow up?
Grew up in Massachusetts, so outside of Boston. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's where I spent, you know, birth through high school was there.
Oh, really?
The Northeast. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. What was high school or the middle school and high school like? What were you like as a kid? Were you a little rambunctious or easygoing?
No, I was a really well-behaved kid and never got in trouble. You know, very diligent student. Never, you know, did any drugs or alcohol or didn't have my driver's license until I was 18. I was very, you know, by the book. When I was for high school, I got into a special program. It was called the Biotech Academy. And what I didn't know, what I know now, you know, 20 years later, is it was essentially just like, you know, brainwashing to indoctrinate you and to be part of the pharmaceutical industry. But really? Learned a heck of a lot about biology, biochemistry, you know, science, that kind of thing.
Really? And it was the technical aspect or the biological aspect of what, of how anatomy, physiology works and how the pharmaceutical, I guess, for lack of better words, how they affect the biological system.
Yeah, I mean, we didn't learn too much human physiology, but a lot of, you know, cell biology, microbiology, biochemistry, that kind of thing.
Right, right.
And that was, and then, you know, sort of in the vein of like, okay, if we learn all this stuff, we can create drugs that are going to, you know, cure all modern diseases, right? And so actually, there was a girl in my class whose father was one of the lead scientists in developing the statin drug at the time, which at the time they didn't call it statin, they called it the cholesterol vaccine, which was supposed to be this drug that if you took it, you'd never get high cholesterol. It's out of the market, it makes billions of dollars, people are still dying of heart attacks. So I don't know if we can count that one a success or not.
No, that one's definitely not a success. And I'll give you just a little quick backstory on me. I was diagnosed with familial hypercholesterolemia at the age of 6.
Six.
Yeah. I had a
great age to put you on drugs.
Atherosclerosis at the age of 6. They told me that I had the arteries of a 70-year-old man and that I would be lucky if I kept eating the way I was eating, that I would be lucky to not have a heart attack by the time I was 16 years old. So, and they didn't put me on a statin then, thank God. They said my liver was too at risk. So they put me on a low fat diet, which took 4 years for my cholesterol to get low enough to where I could eat normal food, what they call normal food. And it took me 4 years. And then after I went vegan, it took me about 4 weeks for my cholesterol to go to normal. So just kind of a little quick backstory. So yeah, statins, I never took them, but I was probably a prime candidate for them.
Yep. And you know, pretty much everybody is the way that the food system's created. So
yeah. Scary. Absolutely scary. So you grew up just outside of Boston. That must have been it's a beautiful, man. A lot of history there.
Yeah. And, you know, growing up in it, you just sort of take it for granted that, you know, the house that I grew up in was built in 1890. There were battles fought in my town in the Revolutionary War. and you just think that like history everywhere goes back 250 years, but like you travel to other places in the United States, you find out it's not really the case.
No. And it's just, seems like that's where it all kind of started, was in that area, you know?
Yeah.
Just absolutely a lot of history, a lot of, well, you know, with the Boston City, the marathon, the massacre at the marathon, that was, I mean, it's been through some tough times, but man, it's what a lot of history and pride in that city. I love it. I love reading about it. Yeah. So you went through high school and you learned biology, the technical side of biology in high school. That's impressive, man.
Yeah, it was kind of funny when I went on to chiropractic school years later, there were like grad level classes in biochemistry where I was like, oh, I learned this stuff in high school. Like stuff that was like, I'm glad I learned it then, because if I had to learn it then, like at the time, it would have just been so much work on top of everything else that was going on. So it did benefit me in many ways as far as like, you know, understanding science and, you know, how to read scientific literature, you know, understanding how basic biochemical things happen. But the philosophical bent on it was very like, you know, pharmaceutical and drug focused, that essentially the human body was this thing that was going to fall apart. It didn't always work right. And so we had to have these interventions and drugs and gene therapies and everything to fix the problems that in actuality, we didn't realize that we were inducing with our diets and lifestyles. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. This was in high school. That's impressive. I mean, if they were trying, at least trying. I know I didn't go through anything like that in high school. So that's impressive, man, that they did that. They were at least trying.
I mean, everybody was the best of intentions, you know. I think people who work in that field, and you know, we can, you know, talk bad about pharmaceutical companies and all the things that they do wrong, but most of the people that work for them like think they're doing a great thing, think they're helping people in the best way that they can. So I don't really, you know, have a grudge. It was extremely formative and gave me a lot of perspective. So I'm glad I did it.
Sure. Sure. And they do. I mean, I think they do. I think the root of all evil is not necessarily the money. It's the love of money. And unfortunately those folks behind the scenes who are making the money, seem to, you know, cause it to be a smelly apple, you know, just a rotten, just something just not so good. But the people behind it, I think, are, you know, the people out there working are generally trying to make a world a better place, or at least they think they are. So,
yeah.
So you didn't, did you pursue this avenue when you graduated high school?
A little bit. So I went on to University of Pennsylvania, started in a biomedical engineering program. And that was like my freshman year was the time that they first allowed pharmaceutical companies to advertise on television. 20 years ago, they didn't do this. A lot of people don't realize this, that like,
that's right.
Like drug ads on TV are like kind of a new phenomenon. Oh, it's been going on long enough, people have forgotten, but once upon a time they didn't exist. So when the first time they had these drug ads and people were, you know how to go. It's like, do you have X and Y? So you're suffering from blah, 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 blah. And it's like a black and white picture. The person looks all sad. And it's like, well, I'll talk to your doctor about Xarelto or Cymbalta or Abilify or whatever. And, you know, it's like, you know, and feel better and blah, blah, blah. And side effects may include nausea, vomiting, unplanned pregnancy, death, dismemberment, you know, asphyxiation, Guillain-Barré syndrome. And you're just like, oh, wait, what? I thought this was like a good... It was like supposed to be a medicine, you know? And so when I saw that, it's just something struck me that I realized like, and you know, one of the first drug ads was for Viagra, right? So it was like Prozac and Viagra were like the main ads on TV. So it was like depression and boner pills, you know? And I just kind of realized like, with all the side effects, like it just, it rubbed me the wrong way. And I was like, I do not want to go into that. So I was just like, basically like opened up the passenger side door, like tuck and roll, bail out of there, you know, while I could.
Right.
And I switched majors to mechanical engineering. And I did that for like about a decade before. So I worked in the computer chip industry.
Right.
And just did that until started having my own health problems in my late 20s. Just completely forgot about the whole biology, pharmaceutical, biochemistry, all that stuff, just put it to the side and just went on and lived my life. And, you know, irony is it came running back.
Comes full circle to you, right?
This time I was, Yeah.
You know, it's funny that you mentioned those commercials. You know, you can I can visualize them in my head of they show the person, like you said, just, you know, sick from whatever they're selling, affliction that they're trying to remedy. And then they tell you, when they're telling you all of the side effects, the dismemberment, nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, and whatnot, they pick the part of the commercial when the people are at their most blissful, or most euphoric, when they're describing those things. It's almost, and they say it so fast that you just, well, pay attention to the picture and not the message, you know?
Yeah, it's so marketing, fun. You know? Yeah.
Marketing.
Play your strengths, yeah.
A lot of money. And Viagra, you know, I know you know this too, and we've learned now that, you know, one of the first signs of, you know, clogged arteries is erectile dysfunction. And
yeah, absolutely.
That's one reason why they tell you if you're on heart pills, usually the person who's taking Viagra is also on some sort of heart pills. So it's impressive, man.
I mean, it's a systemic disease, but we treat symptoms, right? And, you know, there's a lot of money to be made in helping a problem like that. It's an issue people really want solved.
Right.
So,
I don't want
to change my diet and my lifestyle. Yeah. I just want the quick fix so I can pop boners again. Right. So
it's easy
money.
Yeah. Or, you know, hey, I told the story once before. I have a family member who, refuses or told me that he couldn't eat grapefruit. And he said he couldn't eat grapefruit because his, high blood pressure medicine would counteract it, and he could, you know, have a heart attack or get sick and die. And I said, well, why don't you just stop eating fried chicken? And then that way, you know, you can eat a grapefruit. You won't have to take your blood pressure medicine, but they don't want to do that.
Yeah.
So
it's pretty amazing that, you know, this blood pressure medicine can only be taken when your blood pressure is so bad that, you know, because there's a risk of taking blood pressure medication that your blood pressure goes too low and you die. So the only time they're going to give it to you is when your blood pressure is so high that the risk of you dying from high blood pressure is actually lower than the risk of you dying from low blood pressure. Only then will they put you on the medication.
Only then. It's impressive. So I had heard your story that you had developed some polyps in your nasal cavity. Is that right? In an early age, 15?
Oh yeah. That happened back in high school. Yeah. I don't think I've talked about that very much, but that is true. I did develop some polyps.
I found that incredible. Tell me about that. Tell us about that if you would.
So I would say about age 15, 16, 17, you know, I don't really know, somewhere like middle of high school, my sensation of smell decreased dramatically.
Really?
And to this day, I can't smell very well. Like if something's right up in my nose, I can smell it, but it's definitely like I'm the last to smell a lot of things.
Wow.
So it's like when I do notice a smell, I'm like, wow, this must be powerful, right? So I went to a ear, nose, and throat doctor, and he looked up my nose, as he should, performed an exam, and found polyp inside my nose. And he said, well, you have three options. You can huff this steroid spray thing. You know, it's like literally like huffing something.
Right.
Or I can cut them out of you. We put you under the knife and cut them out. And he said, you know, they may never come back, or you may have to come back to me every, you know, 2-3 months and get them cut out again. It's like, I have a guy who comes in every month and gets them cut out again.
Wow.
And I was just like, I definitely don't want you cutting anything out of my nose. And I did the steroids for like maybe a month. And then I think cause I was like 16 years old and just wasn't very responsible. It's just like, nah, I'm not getting any better from this. And I'm like, right. I don't like the idea of like huffing steroids. So jeez. I just said, forget it. And
to this day, you still have a low sense of smell.
Yeah.
Wow.
I will say I did, you know, I need to get on this again, but I started taking ashwagandha, which is an herb, which I'm not a big fan of, like herbs and stuff like that, supplements, but it was said to help with stress. I was going through a very stressful time and I took it and I noticed that my sense of smell started coming back when I was on the ashwagandha, which was funny because I talked to a naturopath doctor friend of mine that will get him on the show for sure. And he was like, look, I've looked through all the literature on this. No one's ever said they got their smell back taking this herb, right. You know, but it was working for me. And then I ran out and I was like, oh, I need to buy more. And I never did. So I'm so used to not having a sense of smell now that I just, it's, I guess it's not a high enough priority for me to like really pursue getting back.
Sure. No, I found that fascinating. I had never heard of that. And like I said, anatomy, physiology, I'm an absolute nerd when it comes to it. So I had not heard of that. That was very interesting that you were able to develop. And they never did give you a reason why. At 15 to 16, they never said why they developed. Is it a hereditary thing?
Polyps were essentially blocking the whatever. I don't know.
Sure.
But polyps were blamed. Yeah.
Wow. That's impressive. Another young lady who lives here in the Austin area that I interviewed, she is she is a raw vegan, and she was having some issues with her sleep deprivation, and come to find out, no matter what she did or tried, it wasn't eliminating, and she was mostly high fruit raw vegan, and went to an ear, nose, and throat doctor and found out that her jaw was set back too far. It was too narrow. It was very narrow. And also that her nasal passages were almost closed off. Her septum was almost like an accordion. And so it was causing her sleep deprivation, which would increase her cortisol levels, which was increasing her cholesterol levels and her stress and just so on and so forth. And it was like a domino effect. And she could not figure out what was going wrong until she went to that doctor and found out that her skeletal structure was causing most of the problems. So,
yeah, I met her at San Diego Fruit Festival and heard that story. It's pretty wild.
Yeah. Rebecca. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. She's great. Great. Awesome. Awesome lady. Well, cool deal, man. So you graduated from high school and moved on into college and then, started, in engineering. Is that right? Mechanical engineering?
Yeah.
Moved
yeah.
into mechanical engineering.
Mm-hmm.
And it moved into the tech world. That's a big jump from biology. Well, I guess it doesn't necessarily. It's just you're taking one thing and transferring it over to another. But going from cellular biology, a technical aspect of that to a computer chip. Is that right?
Yeah. And I was doing a lot of like fluid mechanics, aerodynamics in high school. But I ended up in Austin, and it's like, that's where semiconductor industry is big. And so I was working at Advanced Micro Devices to start. And just once you're in that career path and you kind of develop a skill set, and it's like a certain industries, like if you want to, like, unless you want to start over pay grade wise, kind of stuck doing the same thing for a while.
Right. And you came in here to Austin, Texas.
Yep.
Wow.
Yep. Moved to Austin in 2004 and lived there. Yeah, 9 years. It was about 2010 I started having health problems.
In 2004, I think if I remember your story right, you in 2004, 2005, you had developed adopted a vegetarian, kind of a standard American vegetarian diet. Is that right?
Yeah, mostly for ethical reasons, not really for any kind of health reasons, really, other than I thought, well, if I'm not eating Whataburger, I must be doing better than like the average Joe, right?
Sure.
In my mind, that's how I rationalized it. Right. Yeah.
And you weren't suffering from any kind of issues, health issues at that time, though. Is that right?
No, yeah. I've been pretty much healthy my entire life. I always been lean, never had weight problems. My health was always good.
Right. And your family, same thing. I believe you said that your mom stays relatively thin, but your dad may have some weight issues.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I just thought that, I just had good genetics, basically, was what I chalked it up to. And that, I would, when they pass around like cookies or pizza or something like that at work, and I'd always take, a little more than everybody else, but like, it's going to catch up to you one day. Like, no, it's not. I got good genes. It's like, I'm good. Like I can pretty much eat whatever I want, and like, I'm fine, and it's not going to catch up to me. And I'm like, I'm never going to get fat. And the irony, of course, is that it caught up to me hard. It caught up to me real hard, but not in the way that I expected or anybody else expected.
And you didn't get fat either, right? You didn't see it. Yeah, it showed up on your doorstep just unannounced.
Yep, pretty much.
Wow. Bob Harper talks about that all the time. He's got that commercial where he's, talking about the cholesterol drug, and because he's hereditary predisposed to have high cholesterol, and nobody's more fit than him. And that I know of, I mean, that guy's in incredible shape and got on the treadmill and damn near dropped dead of a heart attack, so it can happen to somebody who's 300 pounds and somebody who's 150 pounds. No doubt.
So, well, you know, ironically, Bob Harper was vegan for a while.
Yep.
And then regressed back onto a standard American diet, and that's when he had his heart attack. So, you know, he likes to blame his genetics, but, you know, we have the epidemiological and clinical data to show that we can reverse coronary artery disease on a plant-based diet. So,
that's right.
You know, my mom tells my, so I have a cholesterol of 125. My mom has cholesterol of 250. My aunt has a cholesterol of 250. I said, you know,
they don't eat the way you eat.
No. And you know, my mom says, well, my cardiologist says that it's genetic because my sister and I, you know, have the same cholesterol, even though we eat healthy and we're thin. We're just, our HDL is high. I was like, Mom, if it's genetic, how come mine is half of yours? She says, oh, well, that's because you eat a different diet. So then it's not genetic, right?
Well,
it's amazing how people rationalize things.
It is. And, you know, they will tell you over and over, you know, that eggs is good fat, or it's so, when you have that many people coming in different directions with different forms of information, you tend to pick out the one that suits your lifestyle without the least amount of change, or with the least amount of change.
Yeah.
So I can,
whatever rationalizes your existing belief system, and you know, pats you on the back for what you're already doing, you're gonna love to listen to that. Yeah.
I mean, I grew up in the South. I grew up in Louisiana, you know, we hunted, we fished, and I ate a pretty horrible diet my whole life, fighting this, you know, genetic disorder that I have. And it took, I'm 47 now. It took me till the age of 44 before I decided, hey man, you know, a good heart scare. My dad had a heart attack. You know, I had a heart scare, and I, you know, it took me being almost 300 pounds and a good heart scare for me to shake me up too. You know, it just, unfortunately, that first sign of a heart attack is usually the last sign. If you're lucky, you catch it before it is. But hopefully your mom sees what you're doing in the moves that you're making, and she turns it around too. I really hope so. It's never too late.
Yeah.
Never too late. Never too late. And so you said you started getting sick around 2010. Is that right?
Yeah. It was sort of like probably the beginning of that year, like January is when I first started noticing things. Mm-hmm. You know, like a little indigestion after a meal here, feeling like I need a little extra caffeine every day. And it just kind of snowballed over the course of 6 to 9 months to where I had just like really bad chronic fatigue, where I was like knocking back 2 to 3 monsters a day. It's like one when I wake up, one at lunchtime, one in the afternoon, you know, just get through the work day. You know, really bad brain fog, made doing my job really difficult. Eczema on my hands. So I don't know if this is gonna be a video podcast, but like from like here to like mid finger to about mid hand on both sides was like, but it wouldn't go any farther on my fingers, it wouldn't go any further down my hand. But it was, so I had this eczema. And it was like, it was real embarrassing because, you know, it was like anytime you shook someone's hand or it was very visible, right? So I had that, and I just had digestive problems, like terrible. Like every meal that I ate was just like World War III on the guts. Like sometimes I was gonna like lie down and clutch my sides, like 9 out of 10 pain. It was, that was what really motivated me to be like, I got to do something about this, you know, because everything else, you know, you just kind of manage and you chalk up to like, oh, that's life. I'm tired. I don't like, I'm just kind of, well, I don't, maybe I don't like my job, or I don't like some aspect of my life, and that's why I don't feel so good. You know, didn't have the foresight to chalk it up to diet, but I guess the digestive thing, and just kind of, even though in the beginning doctors said, oh no, just take this, just take whatever, like just take Pepto-Bismol, or like, oh, maybe you're intolerant to dairy, so just take a lactate, right? Like just cover it up with a pill. Eventually, it stops working, or it stops working nearly as well as it did, right? So that was what kind of first kind of clued me in that, oh, maybe something I'm eating could have something to do with all these chronic health, things I'm suddenly experiencing.
Right. And then at the behest of someone, I believe they mentioned that you should go and get, see if you were allergic to any food or have any food allergies.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. I had a friend who had been talking about like, oh, you know, my acupuncturist told me to like see if I was allergic to food. And then I found out I was allergic to gluten, and then I cut it out and I feel so much better. And at first I was like, your acupuncturist, like, come on, like this is just ridiculous. Like, I was not about anything alternative, anything that wasn't like mainstream medical science. I was thought it was just, you know, a waste of time and money, and just people who weren't smart enough to get into medical school did those things.
Right, right.
But eventually things got kind of bad with me, and I kind of took her aside and I was like, hey, where did you go get that food allergy test? Like, what was that thing that you did? Like, can you tell me?
Yeah.
I kind of had to swallow my pride because I was just continuing to get worse. And then that was kind of what really opened my eyes, because that test came back with, like, you know, a long list of food allergies that I didn't know that I had.
Wow.
And so, you know, the doctor calls me up and he's like reading the lab results to me. And he's like, well, you're allergic to soy and gluten and wheat and barley and brewer's yeast and casein and whey and just like this list of things, right? And I'm like, okay, so
you know,
what are you going to give me?
That almost sounds like all the ingredients in pizza.
Yeah, that's basically all the ingredients in the standard American diet, right? It's just like all the... Yeah.
Casein, whey, you know, it's yeast. I mean, it's cheese and dairy. I mean, dough, and yeah, it sounds like a pizza.
Yeah. So I was like, well, he's like reading it off. I was like, dude, this is basically everything that I eat. You know, like, I ate a lot of pizza and, you know, right. Freebirds burritos. And, and so, I says to the guy, like, well, what, you know, you just read me the problem, like you diagnosed me. Mm-hmm. So what medication are you going to give me?
Right.
And he's like, oh, well, there's no medication. You just have to like cut these foods out of your diet. Mm. And I was like, record scratch, like, excuse me, what? Cause I'm like thinking, no, that's everything I eat, man. Mm. Like, we can't just, I'm not going to eat gluten-free air sandwiches going forward. Like,
right.
That's not going to work. He's like, no, you need to find other things to eat and fresh fruits and vegetables and just sort of, but like didn't really give me any sort of like follow this diet or do read this book or like, it was just sort of like, there you go. There's your information. Good luck, you know? So, pretty much did what I thought was the right thing. And when I started buying the gluten-free, the soy-free, the dairy-free, the fun-free, you know, stuff at, you know, Central Market. And we're talking in terms of like things in Austin, but it was like a mid-level health food store, right? So I'm just buying like the healthy version of all the junk food that's still microwavable and highly processed and slightly less unhealthy, right?
Still staying down the aisles, not necessarily reaching out around there where the produce aisle is. You're just staying down the aisles, but you're reaching for boxes that say gluten-free, dairy-free, so on and so forth.
Yeah. Yeah. And, okay. Number one, it's super expensive. Number two, it tastes terrible. I mean, like maybe the technology's gotten a little better or now it's better, but, back then it was awful. And, part three, the most important part, I really wasn't feeling that much better. Mm. And, yeah, so, you know, after a while of doing this, I got pretty upset with it. I was just like, okay, this quest of, like, what can I eat, you know? And so that got me thinking, well, you know, because I didn't cook or anything, and I was pretty opposed to, like, learning how to cook or prepare food. Like, I wanted it to be super easy. So I said to myself, well, you know, I pretty much microwave all the food that I don't eat out, which is, you know, not that much because I eat out a lot, but I can't keep doing that because that food's killing me.
Right.
So what I could do is maybe I can make smoothies, right? Because like a microwave and a blender is kind of a simpler concept. Like, you open up the lid, you shove the food inside, you close the lid, you hit the button, and 60 seconds later, food, right? Fit for human consumption to varying degrees.
I love that analogy.
So I was like, okay, I'll just start making smoothies, you know, I'll just throw whatever's in the fridge and throw it in the blender, and you know, I'm mixing like broccoli and blueberries and, you know, habanero peppers and just like whatever's like hanging out. And like, and then I'm just like, I got to eat fruits and vegetables. They're good for me. Like, you know, knock it back.
Oh, wait. And, I got to know, man. I mean, are you kidding? Are you serious? Cause I got to know, does broccoli, blueberry and habanero peppers taste good?
No, that one was pretty awful. Like, I remember that one being like, man, I gotta figure something out, you know, cause this is not working. Like, I know, like, I was feeling slightly better. Like, I kind of figured out I was onto something, but I was realizing like there's got to be a process or like a formula or like a, just a, there's got to be some basic guidelines on this, you know?
Sure.
So I just decided, why don't I just go on YouTube and like look for smoothie recipes and just find some videos of how to make some smoothies. And that was like basically the, you know, stumbling block that sent me down the rabbit hole of like, you know, you search smoothie recipes on YouTube and, you know, life is never the same again.
That's right. It'll lead you down a rabbit hole. You're right. It started me on that rabbit hole too. I was, when I went vegan, I didn't know what I was doing for a week and a half, 2 weeks. I ate popcorn and ramen noodles. You know, I didn't know what to do. But you know, Ravana, who's recently switched back over to, you know, standard American diet after she got caught, her smoothie recipes got me got me started down that road. Fully Raw Christina, her simple recipes got me started. But the smoothies is what got me going, is what got me started. Cause I'm like you, I didn't really know how to cook or what to cook. I knew how to cook. I just didn't really know what to cook. And I knew that smoothies, I could get the most nutrition the quickest. And so that's where I started. Same thing, went down the rabbit hole and oh my God, man, it's just like the doors just opened everywhere. So
Yeah. I was not prepared for how life-changing that would be. A million ingredients, just try to go with basic stuff, you know, bananas and berries and spinach and you know, it doesn't need to be super complicated, which I was grateful for. Like this is a smoothie of literally just like bananas and a little bit of organic greens and that's it, right?
Yeah.
And I realized that was what I needed. I like simple, you know, and it was like, oh, I have digestive problems, so I don't want a complicated, like, multi-ingredient thing to throw at my digestion. I want it to be easy for my digestion to do. I was like, this is easy. So, you know, I got really engrossed in it and, like, you know, just started drinking smoothie. Pretty soon got a juicer, started making green juice because I was watching Dan McDonald, who was all about that. That was kind of the first guy that I found. And
right. In
the beginning, I thought he was just like a crazy hippie nut job where I'd just be like, would you just shut up and get the recipe, dude? Because I don't want to hear all your like philosophy jibber jabber, you know. And I would even comment on there.
Dan like, the man, Dan hippie. The man.
Yeah. Just make the smoothie. Just make the juice already.
Yeah. Yeah. He's great, man. He does. You get a 30-minute video or 20-minute video of and 15 minutes of or you know 20 minutes of life lessons and philosophy, and then he breaks down the good stuff. So I know exactly what you mean. I love him.
Yeah, back then, I mean, it was like YouTube, you can only do 10 minutes.
Right.
So
right.
He would like – you would have to cram it all in 10 minutes.
well, I love him. I love
but,
that guy.
Yeah. I mean, but I you started got, doing that and just –
Yeah, just, and you got better. You got better at the smoothies, I guess.
Yeah, I got better. But even just like really doing, you know, like I mean, I didn't go 100% raw overnight or anything, but just you know, incorporating like I saw huge shifts in my health in like a very very short period of time, like two to 3 months. I was like, you know, not only was I like pretty much 100% better, but I had more energy. I just felt better about life. I just felt like I was a totally new human being.
You had an autoimmune disorder. What is it called again?
It's called chronic myalgic encephalopathy. So at the time, I didn't know what it was. It took me a long time to figure out what it was. So I just knew that I just didn't feel good. I had all these symptoms and that like my digestion was terrible. That's all. It was really in the beginning, I was just trying to find food that I could eat without my digestion, like feeling like it was going to explode. But I really didn't expect to, you know, reverse all these other symptoms that were going on that were part of this larger systemic disease. Like I just wanted my stomach not to hurt. It's really, you know, it's like when they say all the dude wanted was his rug back, but then he went on this big adventure. It was kind of like all the dude wanted was his stomach back.
Yeah.
And he went on this big adventure.
So myalgic, so that's going to be, has to do with your muscles, I'm assuming, with you had muscle fatigue,
had
basically,
like,
and muscle pain?
I had chronic muscle pain. Like, it felt like my muscles were always sore.
Holy crap. Yeah. That's incredible. I mean, you know, and what's sad is some people, you know, they chalk that up to just, like you had said before, either old age or...
I was old at 27, 28.
Right, which is, you know, ridiculous. I'm almost 50, and I don't ever have pains. I don't think age should have a factor in it, man. If you're, and if you do at 28, that's a check engine light that you might want to get checked out.
Yeah.
So, and the encephalopathy is, that's not good, man, dude. That's cerebral, bro. That's.
Yeah. This basically means brain suffering.
Yeah.
Translate directly from Latin, but yeah, nice. I just had, you know, brain fog basically. Oh, so, I mean, all these names are just Latin names that they throw at certain collections, right, of symptoms. Like, disease names are somewhat arbitrary, so I don't like to get hung up on any particular diagnosis, but you know, ultimately,
the name
of the disease is often irrelevant. That, like, right, the same approach to get you sick when you're well works for pretty much any of them.
You know, the one thing that ties them all together, all those names, and I know you've talked about this before, and I've talked about it before too. The one thing that ties all of these diseases, chronic illnesses, sometimes acute illnesses, whatever, is inflammation.
Yep.
You know, inflammation. And you know, inflammation is good for some things. I mean, if you get stung by a bee or get bit by a mosquito, yeah, your histamines, you know, go to that area. They swell it up. They inflame it so that it clogs off any, I think Joe Cross has talked about that before in his video. But it's to impede any toxins from going through. But, you know, when you are consistently digesting or ingesting foods that cause inflammation throughout the body, that's not good. That's not a good thing.
Yeah, it's definitely helps in small doses and, you know, in certain emergency situations, but being chronically inflamed is a sign that there's a big problem going on.
You know, I they've removed it, but a while back, when I was going down the YouTube rabbit hole, of course, I had found a video of this Asian doctor who was, he had a protocol that he was promoting, and it was called a meat eater's colon versus a plant eater's colon. I don't know if you've ever seen it, but the video was, that I saw, was longer. They have one now, but it's really, really short. It's only just a few minutes long, but the one that I saw was longer. And they were showing, you know, studies of different patients, and they would go in through their colon, and they would say, this is the colon of a 35-year-old male who, and they would list what he ate or she ate, and give the diagnosis of what they were suffering from. And oddly enough, they would show a plant eater's colon. The colon was, you know, relatively clean. It looked healthy, vascular. It looked beautiful. And it was able to be expanded with air like it should. And then they would show a person who was eating a lot of cottage cheese or drinking a lot of milk. And I tell this because a lot of people think when they eat dairy that the dairy blocks them up. And it doesn't necessarily block them up. What I learned was, is your colon spasms and it inflames and gets thick. It's so thick and it spasms so bad that air can't even keep it inflated. And that's what causes a lot of backup. And it was absolutely impressive to watch. And even people who get off of the dairy and go to this guy's protocol, it really, really cleaned them up. It was impressive.
I never thought about that before, but that makes a lot more sense than just dairy just being cloggy in general.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was impressive, and it's very hard to find the video. I've looked for it several times, and I can't find the full length video anymore. It's there, I'm sure. I just can't find it. But that's impressive. And inflammation is the key to a lot of problems. And it sounds like that was the kind of the key to yours. And so, what were the first symptoms that you noticed that were going away when you started doing your smoothies and juices?
Well, I noticed that, you know, there was no problem digesting those foods for the most part, but you know, I wasn't in 100%. You know, I would still go back, and you know, I wasn't like, I went through a period where I was just sort of adding them in and had no intention to like really change my diet or lifestyle permanently. I just sort of saw it as like, okay, well, these are the foods that don't upset my stomach, but when I'm out with my friends, I'm still gonna have pizza, and you know, eventually the contrast of just like, you know, the good food versus the bad food became so apparent. It's like, man, I know what's going to happen if I go eat that. I can't do it, you know? So there was never really intention to become a vegan or, you know, adopt a healthy lifestyle as like a permanent thing. Mm-hmm. But as I went on, like my body just sort of called the shots and I just couldn't do it anymore. You know, it's like, you know, Tony Robbins talks about, it's like when the pain of staying the same becomes greater than the pain of changing, it's like harder to stay where you are doing the same thing you're doing because it's so bad. That's actually easier to change. That's when people change. That's when I changed.
Yeah.
So, you know, it took a while, but, you know, by like early 2011, I was like, I'm just done. Like, I'm done with the animal product, like the dairy products and the, like, I'm just done with, you know, a lot of these processed foods and just like had enough, you know? Right. And so I made the change and just didn't look back.
You know, that's impressive. You know, people say, you know, I'm lactose intolerant. I said, no, you're not a baby cow. You know, you're not lactose intolerant. You're just not a baby cow. It's not designed for you. Can you eat it? Can you drink it? Well, of course you can. But I mean, you know, theoretically we can drink, you know, we can drink antifreeze. I mean, we can, it's possible. Yeah. It's physically possible. You're going to suffer consequences from it, of course. And, you know, I think the same thing with gluten. You know, I don't know that we were necessarily meant or designed to eat. The more I do research, the more I look into it, it seems like we are designed to eat fruits and you know, and leafy greens and things like that. And it just doesn't seem like those things upset our stomachs like those other. You very seldom hear people say I'm blueberry intolerant, you know, or I'm grape intolerant. You know, I'm assuming people can't have allergies to it, but very seldom do you hear that. But gluten and dairy is like V1.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like everybody is to some people are just to such a large degree that they're, you know, it really interferes with their life. But, you know, if everybody cut it out, they'd notice, substantial differences in their energy and their mood and their digestion and, you know, many other metrics of health.
Right. Right. So you totally flipped and went 100% into it. Is that right? About when did that take place? After you were diagnosed, how long did it take before you said, okay, this is it. I'm here.
I was never formally diagnosed with the disease. Okay. The food allergy test was probably like summer of 2010.
Oh, I got you.
And then, it was February 1st, 2011 was when I like decided and you know, I had been studying about the ethical and environmental aspects of it too. And it just sort of all came to a head. So one of the things that happened was when I was doing this diet, you know, I went from chronic fatigue to like abundant energy to where I was like, oh man, I have all this energy. Like I kind of want to try things. I want to like work out more. And then like, oh, my friends are doing the Warrior Dash race. I want to do that. Oh, my friends want to sign up for a Tough Mudder. Well, let's do the Tough Mudder. And I ran the Tough Mudder and just like, I don't know if you know, it's like a 12-mile like through the mud obstacle race, and the last obstacle is like running through all these electrical wires that zap you. It's pretty intense.
Yeah.
And I finished the Tough Mudder, and at the end they have like a little celebration area at the end, and you with your ticket you get like a free turkey leg and a beer. And I was like, okay, definitely not eating any of those. And then they're like, well, here, we'll have this recovery drink. It's called honey milk. It's honey and milk. And I'm just like, why would I just train? I realized I trained for this race pretty much vegan the entire time. Because I was like, not that I was like trying to be vegan, but I was just like, okay, like the race is coming. Like I got to be like training hard. I got to be like have my nutrition dialed. And it wasn't even like, and so it's like, now I'm just going to go just like throw that all out the window to have some drink you hand me. Like, no, this is stupid. And I just sort of like looked around at everybody like eating turkey legs, drinking beer and these other like processed foods and drinks that they were handing out. And it's just like, I don't even want any of this. Like, this is dumb. Like, let's go home. and then that was just sort of like I just did the Tough Mudder. Like I did it on a plant-based diet, like on a vegan diet. Like, why would I go back?
Right.
You know, why would I just, so that was kind of the turning point of like, you know, realizing I had like run Tough Mudder on a vegan diet kind of de facto. And I was just like, well, I'm sticking with like, I'm, this is it. If I can pull this off, like I'm sticking with it. That was kind of my mentality there. That's what really shifted.
There you go. There you go. That was your aha moment. Your body said, "Hey, dummy, we don't need that. We don't need that.
Yeah,
we don't need that."
And you hit, so I'm so better off without it. Like, look at all that I accomplished and did, and how my life changed. Like, I'd be stupid. Like,
well, you know, you stay in pain, or the body is incredibly adaptive. I mean, it is incredibly adaptive.
Oh, yeah.
And we'll get into the chiropractic part of it too here shortly, but. You know, we will compensate for pain until, like you said, Tony Robbins said, until that sting of pain outweighs. You know what I'm saying?
And so,
you were comfortable for so long that when you finally, your body said, "Oh, this is what this feels like. This is what clarity looks like. This is what colors, sound, feeling, smell." Well, your smell is a little off, but taste buds, things like that. And once you realize, okay, well, this food does taste good. These things are pretty. Colors are pretty. You don't want to go back. You never knew how good feeling good felt until you do. And then now when you do, a turkey leg just doesn't look appealing to you at all.
Yeah, right? Totally.
It's impressive. So how did someone with a mechanical engineering background and even maybe cellular engineering background get into chiropractic work? How did you make that jump? How did you make that leap?
Sure. So, obviously at the time, I was going through all this, I was, self-educating massively. So I was, watching a ton of YouTube videos, I was also reading books and got really into the natural hygiene stuff. Are you familiar with Professor Arnold Arendt and yes. Mucus Listed? So yes. Yeah, I was reading that. And then a lot of the other natural, like Herbert Shelton, and a lot of these guys who ran fasting centers.
Mm-hmm.
For the most part, they were all chiropractors. Mm-hmm. And so I like looked into it some more. And I just, when I hit around age 30 and I just realized like it was time to make a change. Like I just, my perspective on life had shifted so much that truly I didn't feel like I remember in my job, we were making these microchips that were like going to go into these like blood sugar monitors for people with diabetes. And the company was real excited because like they came back from a meeting with the customer who was making the blood sugar monitors, and we were building the microchip that went inside. They're like, "Oh yeah, the diabetes market is like exploding, mm-hmm. and like we're going to be selling so many of these chips. Like we're just gonna make money like hand over fist, And everyone's right. Like, "Yeah, oh, this is awesome," And everybody's like thinking they're doing a good thing. Everyone's like, "Oh, we're going to help all these people with diabetes." Like, why is the diabetes market exploding in the first place? Like, that might have been an appropriate question to ask. But no, sure. It's like there's a demand out there and we're going to serve it. So, but I'm there like, thinking like, I know type 2 diabetes is a completely a foodborne illness. Like, there's That's no right. need for it to explode. So I'm kind of like just want like knowing something that no one else knew in the room and just like watching like, "Oh my God, like these people don't know." And I think I just couldn't be a part of it. I needed a way out. Right. And I needed a way to, best use the gifts that had been bestowed upon me that, started out as essentially severe disease. And which greatest thing that ever happened to me, by the way, getting sick, absolute greatest thing that ever happened to me by a long shot.
Well, it woke you up.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I knew I needed to that I had knowledge that needed to be shared. Mm-hmm. And I knew that I had gotten all these doctors who, really couldn't tell me anything, couldn't do much for me at all. And I was like thinking, man, like if I had 5 brain cells and their qualifications, like I could have done a better job, And then I was like, well, wait, hey, maybe I could. I had thought about naturopath, but as you probably know, that's not licensed in Texas. Like you can't be a naturopathic doctor. You can be a naturopath, but your scope of practice is like severely limited. And so I thought, well, I'll just go, chiropractic is also a drugless profession. Mm-hmm. I'll go learn that. And then I have another skill in my toolbox to be able to use with people besides just nutrition that I would be like comfortable using. Cause I didn't want to like go to medical school and like learn how to do drugs and surgery and spend all that time learning something that I really didn't ever want to have to do to anybody. Like I did not want to ever have to put anybody on drugs and never want to cut anybody open. So it's like, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to invest my time and money in something, like years of my life, going to be something important that I'm actually going to value, as opposed to like, oh, well, I learned search, but I don't do any of that. Like,
right.
What's the point?
Right.
So yeah. So applied to chiropractic school, moved to Los Angeles where the fruit was amazing, and yeah, just sold my house in Austin and just didn't look back.
You know, I saw one of your videos the other day. I think it was something what you were eating in a day. And
wow, you really researched me. This is impressive.
Well, I find people fascinating. I find psychology fascinating, and the way people think and what makes people tick. I like to research and find new people and new outlooks on life and the way that people are, their philosophy of people. You know, I don't want to agree with everyone. I don't agree with everyone, with everything. And I feel like I can't learn unless I do listen to other viewpoints and see what's out there.
Oh, totally.
So
important.
It is. It is very important. And I was watching you, and you were doing a what you eat. And I think you were picking up, you found some tangerines on a tree. And I think it was how to eat 80-10-10 raw under $10 in a day. I think that's what it was.
Yeah.
And you were just walking by and like, oh, look at these trees. Oh, you know, the figs, they haven't produced yet. And then you get to the tangerines and you pick your tangerines, you get back and all of your persimmons. I mean, you had so many persimmons. I have never seen that many in my life. And it made me think that, you know, all this fruit is out there, you know, all this food is out there. And people ask why or how do I do it? It's so expensive. You know, you talked about it earlier, you know, the vegan food is so expensive. And I tell them, no, it's not. You know, hell, bananas are 49 cents a pound here where I live. You know, grapes are 99 cents a pound. We just picked up some the other day. You can walk into any grocery store and there's a little produce aisle or produce section. You just go visit that area and you can find just about anything you want. And it's cheap. It's not expensive, at all. Rebecca Rosenberg, we talked about her earlier today or earlier. One day she told me, she says, posted that she had went to a farmer's market and picked up some okra. And I love okra. I mean, I cooked okra, dude. I could, it doesn't matter how you cook it, I'd eat it. So I asked her, I said, well, how are you going to eat that? Or no, somebody asked her, said, how are you going to eat that? And she said, with my teeth. And I thought, wait a minute. And I thought, you're going to eat this raw. And of course she's going to eat it raw. So we went and we bought some, and I'll be damned. And raw okra, I don't know if you've ever tried it, but it's freaking good.
Oh, it's great. It's good. Yeah.
Holy crap. It's good. So there's so many new things out there that if people would just give it a shot, you know, it's incredible. It's absolutely incredible.
Yeah, totally.
And you went to California where, oh my gosh, oh my Lord, just abundant, right?
Yeah. I first started walking my dog in my neighborhood. I found all these fruit trees, you know, stuff you've never even heard of, white sapote, not sold in stores, tastes like a creamy custardy fruit. So yeah, all this stuff. I live in Arizona now. I just moved to a new neighborhood beginning of the month. I've already found like all this new stuff in my neighborhood, including and this podcast episode won't air for a few days, right? I told my girlfriend, hey, I was walking the neighborhood and I found a fruit you've never probably seen before, and I picked it for you. It's a surprise. I'll show you in a few days when I see you. And then I found another fruit yesterday. And I was like, hey, I got two surprise fruits for you. Anyway, so this podcast won't air for at least probably until I see you next in a few days. Dragon fruit.
Oh, yeah.
I found dragon fruit literally growing on a cactus.
Oh, my gosh. Are you serious?
Yeah. I mean, it was a tiny one. It was like a little bitty one. But when I lived in L.A., I found like really big ones growing on a cactus. But, yeah, it's out there. You know, it is. And if for me, it was like, I had to get well. Like, I had to do it. There was no like, oh, it's too expensive. Screw it. I'll just be sick. It was like, we got to figure out a way to make this happen. Okay. Mm-hmm. And that's when possibilities open up, when you're like, you know, I got to like burn the boats. We got to figure out a way to do this diet and lifestyle to get well. Mm-hmm. Then all of a sudden it's easy, right? I'm going into HEB and buying cases of bananas for $17, you know, it's a 40 pounds, right?
Right.
So it's a lot of it's perspective, and it's easy to chalk it up and say, oh, it's too expensive. But there are ways to actually that it's actually way cheaper than a standard American diet, especially if you're not eating out anymore. And let me tell you, you know what's expensive? Disease, doctors, drugs, being sick. Like, and that's just the front end cost. There's the back end cost of like actually being ill, missing work, missing out on life, not being able to do, you know, the things that you wanted to do because you're not well. You can't even put a price on those things. You know, people tell me it's too expensive. It's like, try being really sick. Right. That's way more expensive.
Right. And it doesn't cost you. It doesn't cost you just money. It costs you time. It costs you loved ones, relationships. It's extremely selfish way of life, I think. And being there for someone is a lot more than being there with them, I guess. And I don't want that to be misconstrued, but when I say being there with them, if they want to go out and drink or eat pizza, you know, and they just want you to be with them, because, you know, let's face it, food is social. It's a social event, and yeah, and it's social first as opposed to nutrition. And we, if we will be there for them, you know, to be their friends, to be their loved ones, to be there for them, as opposed to just going out and hanging out with them, I think that's, unfortunately, that causes a lot more cost than the other. And I think, you know, people say, you know, well, I gotta, you know, I want to live. You got to die of something. I want to live my life. If I'm going to die early, I'm going to, you know, I want to have fun. And I told him, yeah, you know, you're right. You do have to die of something, but you have to live for something too. And what are we going to live for? And so it's extremely expensive, and it's extremely selfish in that way, I believe.
Yeah. And also, I mean, people say you're going to die someday. Well, you know, understand that the average American goes out in parts over 30 years. It's not just like, everything's going great, you're like rocking and rolling, and then, you know, one day you hit 85 and you drop dead. No, it's like, you know, you start losing toes to diabetes, you start like, you know, losing your vision, you start losing your teeth, it's like, oh, you know, it's like just crumbling, losing your mind, and it's like, oh, this protracted period. Meanwhile, the pharmaceutical industrial complex is like siphoning all the money out of you, right?
That's right.
You're losing your health, it's not a quick death. It's a very slow death. It's an expensive and painful one.
It is. Yeah. It's an expensive and painful slow death. You're not living longer. You're just dying slower, basically, yep. Is what it
totally.
Is.
Totally. That's a great way to put it.
That's very true. So you got off into the naturopathic world of chiropractor care. And I'll tell you a little side story. I've been adjusted once. Okay. I had gotten to the point to where I couldn't turn my head one way or the to the left or to the right without it being extremely painful. And so I went to a lady who does chiropractic care, and she reset or aligned my neck. And the way she did it, it sounded like a gunshot went off inside my brain. And then I said a bad word and started with F. And she said, oh, don't worry, we just have to do it the other way now. I said, oh my God. And so she did it again. Granted, I felt like $1 million afterwards, but it scared me so bad. I'm scared to do it again, but it is incredible. I could hear clearer afterwards. It was insane. Absolutely insane. So I tell that little side story because I just wanted to touch on the way that how chiropractic care helps folks with their, the afflictions that we're suffering from today, whether it's bad posture or, you know, standing wrong, walking wrong, our natural gait or lack thereof natural gait. What is chiropractic care? How does that work, man?
So that's a question I could give you, you know, a 2-hour answer on. I'll try to give you a 2-minute answer, right?
Okay.
Or less. So basically chiropractic, the main thing is what people need to understand. Part one thing is that it's designed to work with the nervous system. That you know, you have this cord, this information superhighway that goes from your brain through your spine. The spinal cord carries all the information, allows all the communication from your body to your brain, and vice versa.
I love that analogy, by the way. Cord of super, that's great. That's absolutely great.
Yeah. So that's how your brain controls your body, is through your spinal cord and your nervous system, and also how it receives sensory input as well. They go in the opposite way. Sure. So if that main information superhighway ran through your right arm instead of your back, chiropractors would be right arm doctors. Okay.
Right.
But it runs through your spine. So that's why we focus on that. So it's essentially just like, if you're doing a dietary approach, right, where you're trying to reverse disease, you're trying to like take all these bad foods and put in good, healthy, raw fruits and vegetables, you're essentially like removing obstructions, right? Like Arnold Arendt said that V equals P minus O, which is like vitality equals power minus obstructions. You remove the obstruction, health is the result. Well, it's the same way with the nervous system. If your spine is out of whack and it's twisting or impinging nerves or the spinal cord itself, the body's ability to self-regulate, the body's ability to self-organize, and the body's ability to self-heal is inhibited. And so by removing that interference to the nervous system, we get the full expression of health. The body can do its thing, right? Like if you're feeding it pizza and cheeseburgers, it can't really do its thing. If you have nerves that are pinched or a spinal cord that's wound up too high, like the brain and body can't quite do its thing. And so just like the food removes interference at a cellular chemical level, the chiropractor removes interference at like a neurological level.
Right. Right. That's impressive, man. I love the way you said that. The cord how did you say it? A cord of information superhighway, is that right?
The information superhighway, yeah, runs from your brain to your body, yeah.
That's a very simplistic way of looking at it, but it's so true, and I think it's a way that folks can understand it. you know, I had a person tell me one time that they had a pain in their stomach, and I said, well, you know, the way that he was describing it, I said, well, it sounds like you may have hurt your back, you know, and he's like, well, why is my stomach hurt, you know, and I said, well, you know, you got nerves, brother, that reach around, that wrap around, and sure enough, he had a nerve that was getting hit by, I guess, a disc maybe in his vertebrae, and was touching a nerve, and I've had, you know, sciatic nerves issues with my leg and my back, which I don't have anymore now that I've, you know, went plant-based. I don't have those issues anymore. The inflammation's gone. But yeah, that information superhighway is so important.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about Christopher Reeve, right? Like he was Superman, fell off a horse, broke his neck, paralyzed from the neck down, right? He did an MRI. He looked at his spinal cord, and there was a piece of bone from his spine that was jutting into the spinal cord, the size of the tip of a pinky finger, was enough to paralyze, right?
Wow.
So it is a very fragile system. It does not take much. You got to take good care of it.
That's awesome. That's awesome. You know, something else that you said that I found super fascinating was the term reorganizational. Reorganizational healing. That is please describe the definition of that, because I find that fascinating. Absolutely fascinating.
Yeah, this is something that I experienced when I changed my diet and initially went through my health transformation, that I learned about later, that there was a chiropractor named Donnie Epstein who coined this term, and it was something that I experienced firsthand and tried to articulate, but I thought that this definition of reorganizational healing is fascinating. That basically there are two types of healing modalities. Mm. That there's restorative healing and there's reorganizational. Okay. And so restorative is like, let's restore you back to the way that you were.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Like, let's just get you back to how you were before you were sick. Reorganizational, which when you do that, ultimately you're bringing someone back to like a prior fragile state, right? And they're just going to get sick again.
In which most people are probably think that they're happy to get there to that restorative. Yeah. Oh, okay. Well, yeah, just get me back to where I was feeling okay.
Yeah, exactly. Like they're happy with okay. Right. And that's where I was trying to get back to okay. Drugs and pills and like, you know, gluten-free macaroni and cheese weren't even getting me there, right?
Sure.
So I fell down the rabbit hole of organizational healing, because when I changed my diet and all of a sudden, like, you know, my disease conditions went away, but I had all this new energy. I was running and doing Tough Mudders. I was changing my career. I was like totally this insanely awesome new version of myself. Maybe that's self-aggrandizing, but I was this new and better man that I like hadn't expected existed, right? I was forced to reorganize. And so that's why, like, the disease, I see it as a gift. Like, it was this magical gift that opened up the other things in my life. That had I just been restored to my previous self, it would not been nearly as nice. So I think, like, when people, you know, you have these health crises, you have to see them as an opportunity. Like, you know, it's an opportunity to improve many aspects of your life.
Sure.
And that, you know, we can get you back to not just where you were, but like, there's no point in going, but you can't go back. You can't go back in time. Or it doesn't work that way. Like, laws of physics don't allow it, as far as we know, but like, let's go forward. Let's take this disease. Someone used a term. It was like disease opportunity or something like that. I think it was John Kohler. I can't remember what the term he used, but it was brilliant. I was like, I got to start saying that. And then I forgot what he said. But basically, like, use this as a springboard to a whole new life. Like, look at you now. Like, you're, you just wanted to, like, not die of a heart attack, right? But now you're, like, traveling around in an RV, raw food is doing a podcast. Like, all this other cool stuff that never would have happened, right?
That's right.
So that's reorganizational healing. Like, let's just see disease as an opportunity as opposed to something we want to, like, take away. That, like, it happened for a reason. For actually a good reason. And when you like take people's pain away, or you cover up their symptoms, or you do any of that so that they don't have to feel it, you're actually depriving them. You're actually depriving them of like major life lessons and things that they need that they're going to give as gifts to everybody else. You know, so this idea of like suppressing disease, suppressing symptoms, is just like so counterproductive.
And they become that disease. You know, the people, that becomes their identity. People with lupus, well, you know, it's almost like, oh, I am lupus. Or people with cancer, I am cancer.
My diabetes. They internalize it as part of who they are.
It's not. It is not who they are. And that's what I want folks to understand, that it can be turned around. Folks like you, folks like Dr. Brooke, who had lupus at 16. I interviewed a lady who had kidney cancer. She had one kidney removed and had the other one, came back with the other one, the vengeance, and she healed herself of it. So it's the body's resiliency is incredible. It's an absolute perfect design that is on a cellular level does not want to die. All it wants to do is live. That's all it wants to do. And we do our damnedest to kill it.
We have no idea how hard we make it work to not die. Like, until we get well, we're like, man, I can't believe I was surviving on something. My body actually survived all that poisoning I did to it for decades. Wow.
How did it do it?
And really appreciate it.
Reorganizational. I love it. Reorganizational healing. Cause you know, you're building anew, you know, and you're using all the gifts that's been given to us, whether it's physically, mentally, spiritually on the earth, out there in a garden, or at the grocery store. They're gifts, and they're there for the picking, man. They're on that tree, brother. You walk right by that tangerine tree, and you had a box full of just beautiful, luscious, beautiful fruit. Just free gift. And hydration, you know, what is it? Hypernourishment is what Dr. Brooks says. Hypernourishment. I love that. That and reorganizational healing. Those are two of my new favorite terms. I love it, man. I love it. Absolutely love it, brother. So you have, you've kind of went full circle, and you are assisting folks. Matter of fact, I even downloaded your, ARB, autoimmune,
recovery blueprint.
Yeah. Yeah. Talk a little bit about that, man. That's impressive, brother. I read for the first seven pages, today. It's impressive.
Sure. So, I mean, basically what I wanted to do was like back, you know, 9 years ago when I had this problem, there was nobody, like, I didn't know what to do. I had to figure everything out on my own. And it took a while, like a lot of setbacks and mistakes, and not that I regret any of it, but like what I wanted to do was just create something that I could hand my old self from 9 years ago. I'm like, you're sick, just do what's in this, start doing that, work at it, you'll get well. You know, so like, oh, okay, I have a blueprint. I have a starting and jumping off point. So that's basically what I created, just as like a quick start guide, you know, because a lot of people, because let me tell you, with autoimmune disease, you know, you got people like me and you got people like Dr. Brooke Goldner who had the disease and who reversed it and did the work and like their testimony. But guess what? There's a lot of people out there who are like, man, this autoimmune disease thing, it's creeping up. There's a lot of them. We can make some money, sell them some supplement pills, sell them this protocol, this and that. And like, they don't have any experience with it. They don't really know what it's like, you know? Right. And so, unfortunately there's a lot of, scammers, hucksters out there who are just trying to make a buck. And, I'm in this heart center. Like, I'm in it to help people because I went through it. I want people to suffer as much as I did. And so this is like the basics of like, here's what worked for me, it can work for you too. So that's why I created autoimmunerecoveryblueprint.com. You go on there, you sign up on my email list, it's free. And I really don't even send that many emails, like one a month. I should probably send more.
You should.
It's the fundamentals to self-heal from autoimmune disease.
It's so sad to watch folks. And on Instagram, I follow a tag of lupus, the lupus tag, you know, hashtag lupus. And some of my news feeds are just, they're just sad. It's so sad because they have become that disease. They have become that disorder. And, you know, there are numerous memes about, about being in pain. And I don't want to belittle it because it is a nasty, nasty, debilitating disorder. As any, you know, autoimmune disorder is. My brother-in-law has MS, and but these folks, they just, I don't want to say that they are comfortable in it. They just, I feel so bad. I just want to tell them, hey, look, you know, scream from the mountaintops. Look, there's help. It's out there. And you provide that other opportunity. You provide another avenue, not just Dr. Brooke. It's great that Dr. Brooke does what she does, but it's great to have somebody like you who also has lived this disorder in a different disorder. You know, because some people say, "Well, yeah, well, that was just lupus." You know, yeah, that can't cure what you have. You know, chronic. What was it again?
Chronic ME, myalgic encephalopathy. Yeah.
Myalgic encephalopathy. Yeah, it can't cure that. It cured lupus, but not this, not ME. It cured ME, but it didn't cure MS. Yeah, it does. It can, or at least improve your lifestyle.
I have a friend who, he is in the process of reversing MS. He got a lot better, and he's been posting in this MS support group about like, hey, I'm doing plant-based diet. This is what's happening. I'm improving. And people are just like, "Bash, you can't say that. There's no cure for MS. You're giving people false hope. What are you doing to people? Like, this is a death sentence." You know, like, was literally like the crabs pulling you back into the pot, you know?
You know what?
It's sad, yeah.
Well, let's just say for sake of argument that it doesn't cure it, okay? Let's just say it doesn't, all right? But you know what it does? It makes you the best you that you can be. And if you're at... If MS has you at 30% and this brings you to 50, you know, that's the best you that you could be. Who knows? It could go to 60, in a year, 70, 80, you know, whatever. It's the best you that you can be. And it's a hell of a lot better than, screw it. I got MS. I'm just going to wait and take my drugs. But I still got to eat my pizzas it's so sad. It's so sad. Yeah. So if folks want to reach out to Dr. Benjamin Benulis, how do they do it?
So like I said, autoimmunerecoveryblueprint.com gets you on my email list. Otherwise, I'm on social media just as my name. So it's Dr. Benjamin Benulis. Last name is spelled B-E-N, like my first name, U-L-I-S. One of the few people who actually pronounced it right on the first try. I was pretty impressed. So that's on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. I'm probably the most active on Instagram. Seriously, probably the easiest way to get in touch with me is just find me on Instagram. Shoot me a direct message because I see those and respond to them.
Right.
That's it. And I'm here to serve and help people. So if this resonates with you, please reach out. Love to have a chat.
Selfless. You're a selfless cat, man. Selfless guy. Good guy, dude. It's impressive to see folks like you and Dr. Brooke and Dr. Arelli. She's venturing off into that world as well as, and just taking, what they've learned and, you know, just trying to help others, in their suffering, because it can. And I love it, man. I applaud you for it, brother.
Thank you. Yeah, absolutely.
I do. And I appreciate you. I appreciate you taking a little time out to visit with me and tell me your story or tell us your story. Yeah, it's good stuff, man. Good stuff. Well, I appreciate it, brother. And with that, I bid you farewell and be safe over there in Phoenix. You should have some pretty weather over there. We're kind of suffering a little bit over here in Austin. It's still a little warm, but hopefully it's...
Oh, I almost got washed away by a flood a couple of days ago, actually. It's been pretty dicey. Yeah, but finally no longer 115 degrees during the day, so I'll take it.
There you go. All right, my brother. Well, you be safe, man, and hopefully we get together sometime. Maybe we meet in person and talk shop.
All right, absolutely. If you're in town, hit me up. Let's do it. Okay.
I'll do it, brother. Take care.
Okay. All right. Adios. Have a good one.
All right. Adios, man. Well, how about that? That was Dr. Benjamin Benulis. You know, great story, great man, doing all that he can to help just anyone that's needing it, you know, just anyone. You know, to go from his background into the medical field, utilizing his knowledge that he discovered simply by accident. Simply by accident. This guy discovered the healing protocol because he was, you know, didn't want to cook. It's just a great story. I love it, man. I love it. And yeah, so if you enjoy this episode, please leave a comment and let me know what you think. With that being said, I wish everyone a good day, a good week. Remember, good choices equal good consequences. If you're going to be a statistic, please be a good one. Y'all have a great day. Love you.